No announcements today. Any pressing topics, questions, concerns? Monday, after class. Goal of that is following posting solutions to this homework. You have the weekend to email me, and then Monday during class, ask any final clarifying questions before the midterm exam starts. Okay. Now, my policy on exams is they are still learning opportunities, which means that I will still answer questions during the exam, but I will only answer fundamental questions. An example of a bad question is, how do I do Part B? Example of a good question is, I'm curious, with reverse recovery, I think it works like this. Is this reverse recovery, or am I missing something? I'm confused about why it jumps to IL and then goes over to our general questions. Okay, fine, I'll still answer those because the goal of the course is to get you guys to understand this stuff, whether we're an exam or not. But I won't check answers on the midterm exam. I won't explain how to do parts of the problem and walk you through it. Fundamental questions related to the theory of the course, still willing to answer. Okay. There's a thin and hazy gray area in there where I'll make some judgment calls, but make sure you're at least in the gray area. Okay. Okay, other questions? Comments?
Are there any areas you recommend we review
whole thing? I'm going to try to write an exam that covers all the things that we've covered in any detail in class. My goal is not to do any kind of gotchas of, I mentioned this once, but on the side, do you remember what I said? The goal is, okay, here's the things we covered in some detail. Do you really understand them? Okay. Well, homeworks should be a good place to start. The things that were covered in the homeworks are things that are likely to make it into the exam. Okay, so nothing else. Then we'll move on. Today we are, as mentioned at the end of class last time, moving into part two of the book, part two of the course, where we're going to kind of shift from what we've been doing so far, which has been all steady state modeling of converters. In every case, we assume we have some defined operating point and the converter is just sitting there at that operating point. And now we're going to start moving into transient operation, and then how, in the presence of transients, do we regulate and control this converter? Okay. So the way we're going to do that, Chapter 7 talks about AC modeling. We're going to extend the techniques that we've been talking about so far for the steady state case to transient cases. Use those techniques to get converter transfer functions that we can use. The transfer functions, as you've seen before, magnitude and phase in the frequency domain. It's going to take some additional tools to be able to get there, because these things are heavily non-linear time-varying systems. We'll talk about how to do that. And then we'll cover controller design, which is, once we have a model of the converter that looks like a transfer function, how do we design a feedback network that gives us good performance in closed loop, doing whatever we want to do it. Whatever we want it to do. We'll talk about what some of those things might be. Most commonly, it's going to be control the output voltage. Chapters 10, 11, and 12, we won't cover due to the semester time limit. 10 talks about filter design, implications towards EMI filters, and other things. Chapter 11 gets into DCM, so we'll be largely looking at DCM type systems in our AC modeling section. And 12 looks at really a completely different type of control than what we'll cover, called current program control, which is more complex, but allows you to cycle by cycle exactly regulate a current in a converter. This one is covered in ECE 482. The type of control we use in the electric bikes in that class. But so we'll cover 7 through 9. And then within 7, We're going to cover in some detail 7.1 and 7.2, 7.3 and 4. We're just going to briefly mention. Introduction, why are we doing this? 7.2 is going to be our modeling approach, which is, as I said, going to extend techniques we've been doing so far in class. So this is going to be built on waveform averaging. Which is this technique where we look at inductor voltages and average them. We look at capacitor currents and average them. Okay, it's going to be different because we're not in steady states. We can't say those averages are zeros, but we can still use those averages to gain information about the circuit. State-space averaging and then circuit averaging are alternate averaging techniques to get you to the same point, the result in the exact same solution. But instead of averaging these waveforms, we can take state-space equations and average them, or we can average the switch behaviors. In all cases, it's going to get us towards an equivalent circuit model with the same equations defining it. So we'll mention them, but not go through in detail because they end up being the same thing. Okay. So to introduce this, we kind of looked at a diagram like this before early on in the course, but it's been a while, so we'll talk again about it. Here is our closed loop DC to DC converter, in this case some buck. And what we have is the actual converter up here, and then everything down in this bottom dashed box is my feedback network that's controlling it. Okay. And in this particular implementation, what we're trying to do is control the output voltage, V of T, and we're trying to control that by making adjustments in the thing that we can't adjust, which is the waveform driving this MOSFET. And specific types of adjustments in that, adjusting the duty cycle of the driving waveform. Okay. So first, why do we need this? Well, we've gone through and we've solved out for kind of a non-ideal buck converter, the output voltage is not just V times VG. V times VG plus some effect due to all these losses in it. Those things can potentially change over time and may be not very well known. So things like the on resistance of the MOSFET, we have a nominal value, but it may vary by some percentage. As well, all of our element values, L and C, may vary by some percentage, both due to manufacturing and over the lifetime of the converter, these things can change. So there's changes due to that. The input voltage likely is not an ideal DC source, likely varies a little bit, has ripple, may change over time. Depends on where that comes from. The battery, it's going to change depending on how much charge the battery has left. It's from some supply, well, supply is another converter and it's going to have some ripple, some potential error in its regulation. The load resistance, depending on what we're powering, can change over time. And what I mentioned before, if it's a processor, it depends on the computing load, how much power it's going to require, and that'll ramp up and down in time. All these things would then tend to, if we don't have control, change the output voltage of the converter. We change the output resistance. If we have some error, the output voltage is not going to be what we want it to be. So in order to keep this output voltage tightly regulated at a defined value, we need this feedback network. The way this one works is it takes the output voltage and feeds it back and then compares it to some reference. This reference we generate inside the controller. This reference tells us what I want the output voltage to be. Okay. And we do a subtraction between the reference and the actual output voltage to generate some error signal. Here, V error is equal to my reference minus my actual output voltage. And then my goal is to drive this error signal to zero, that my output voltage is exactly my reference. If I've done so, my output voltage is regulated. Okay. So in time, the output voltage is going to be changing. A reference may or may not be. If this is just a DC to DC bus, that reference is constant. I'm going to get some time varying error signal. And I'm going to feed that through a compensator, which is going to be some transfer function, it's labeled G sub C of S, that I design. This is going to be some network that I designed to have a given frequency domain transfer function. And I'm going to design that to do two things. One, I need to make sure that I achieve stability of this system. So I'm now going to have a closed loop system, negative feedback. If I do a bad job designing that, could at certain frequencies become positive feedback, could go unstable, cause the output voltage to oscillate, run away. Okay. And then two, I'm going to design it to get the well-behaved system. Which stability should be part of that, but also things like, okay, if the load changes, how much of an overshoot do I see in the output voltage? I want it to be 5 volts. Does it go to 7, then back to 5? Or does it go to 5.1 and then back to 5? And then after that transient, how long does it ring out and how big of an oscillation is there? Things like that. I want this to respond very quickly and respond without a lot of overshoot and ringing. Okay. So we're going to look at how to design that. This compensator then is going to do some frequency domain, either attenuation or give some gain, and it's going to give a control signal shown here, V sub C, that is still a continuous time signal, just this error signal going through the transfer function of this compensator. That is then sent through our pulse width modulator, PWM block, which translates the value of this signal into a duty cycle that is proportional to this value. Okay. So if my control signal goes up, I'll get a greater duty cycle. Something like that. Okay. That is then sent through our gate driver, which is just a buffer. Changes nothing about when it's on or off, but just amplifies the voltage and current of this signal that's coming from some internal control circuitry to high enough levels to drive this MOSFET, turn it on and off quickly. Okay. So what does this overall system look like? From a control perspective, I have my converter, where I input some duty cycle that may be varying in time. As conditions change, as the load changes, I'll change the duty cycle to make sure that my output stays regulated. And then the output, from a control perspective, is an output voltage, V of T, that goes off to power my load. And then I take this output voltage, I feed it back through a negative feedback path, compare it to some reference, and send that error signal into a compensator, G sub C. Then that compensator goes through this pulse width modulator, give it a gain GM to dictate the duty cycle. Okay, so here's my control block diagram. This thing is gain of the PWM. We'll talk about what that is. It turns out being just a simple gain, fixed value. Okay, G sub C, my compensator, is going to be more appropriately G sub C of S. It's going to have dynamics in the frequency domain. The only thing that's missing is, okay, the rest of this looks like a normal control block diagram, but what is the converter? Converter is a thing where we haven't looked at the transient operation yet, but even with what we've looked at, this heavily nonlinear time-varying thing with these big switching actions and other stuff that is going to be real hard to represent on a Bode plot looking in the S domain, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to develop methods to represent this converter as just its own transfer function, GVD of S, which is the gain from duty cycle to voltage in the S domain. Okay. Then, now we've got a control block diagram, everything's in S domain, I can analyze this, I can derive conditions for stability, I can derive bandwidth, make sure it's well-behaved and stable. Okay. Make sense? Okay. A couple comments here. There are many different things that we might want to control in this converter. So the first top right is the same figure from the previous slide. In this one, we were controlling the output voltage. Which is going to be the most common one that we look at. It is going to be used in things like any sort of power supply. Charging your laptop, charging your phone, powering a computer, powering all of the various different internal microelectronic components on all of those systems. Those would be largely DC power supplies. We might also use output voltage control in something like an off-grid inverter. If I am somewhere in the middle of a desert and there's no grid around, but I've got solar panels and an inverter, I can generate my own AC grid. In that case, I'd control the inverter to generate a sinusoidal AC, 60 hertz, 120 volts, if I want to have plug in my laptop to it from the charger. Okay. So power supplies, DC really, or AC, and the software inverter would be controlling the output to track an AC reference signal. Okay. We might control the output current. Which is what we do if we were in a grid tied inverter. Things like PV panels feeding back onto the grid. If I'm going to install PV on the roof of my house, I would have inverters from those feed energy onto the grid, and they would control the output current because the output voltage is established by the grid. It is low impedance, it's got a fixed voltage. So I'm going to try to inject current at the same phase and frequency as the grid voltage, so I'm injecting power onto the grid. Okay. If I try to control the output voltage in some little inverter connected to the grid, if I have any difference between my reference and what the grid is doing, grid's at 120 volts and I tell it to go to 110, my converter is going to pump as much current as it can into the grid, trying to push the voltage, but the grid is so big and has so much more of a backbone to it, my converter can't possibly move it. I'm going to blow up. So I just inject current, let the grid establish the voltage. Okay. I might do input voltage control. This would be, for example, in lab one, what was kind of hinted at in the requested analysis for the lab report, something like a PV maximum power point control. My input is this PV panel. My output is a battery. The output is an established voltage, and I might be regulating my input to put it at the point where the PV is going to generate the maximum power, as an example. And then last one I'll talk about, IN control, controlling the input current. That's what's shown in this figure here. Now sensing the input current of this boost converter, regulating that to some reference through a similar control loop. This is very common in a sort of grid-tied rectifier. For the same reasons why I control output current in a grid-tied inverter. These are absolutely just a subset of potential applications and potential controls. You could control other things. A lot of recently converters will control more than one of these things. I'll regulate the output current and then dynamically set the reference to that current to regulate an output voltage with it. Reasons for that have to do with how fast the converter can respond, how well behaved you can make it. Sometimes it's better to have current and voltage control. Okay. All right, so in this part two, chapters 7 through 9 that we'll cover, goals are to develop the tools for designing these controllers for our power converters. Okay, so we're going to talk about modeling, analysis, and design of the control systems. We need to somehow figure out how we can get into transfer function-like representations of these converters. And the reason we do this isn't at a base theoretical level necessary, but it's because transfer functions are nice. You've seen them, you know how to work with them. Nonlinear, time-varying things are much harder to work with. What we want are transfer functions of the form, for example, GVD is V out of S over D of S. These transfer function things are frequency domain representations that tell me at every frequency from the input to output of the system, what is the gain, what is the phase difference, right? These are only defined for linear time invariant systems. LTI systems, right? Prerequisite. If I'm going to use this sort of a representation where at every frequency I have some gain and some phase, I need a system where when I put in one frequency, what I get out is some gain and some phase of that frequency, something that's not creating other frequencies, something that's not having complex nonlinear behavior that can't be represented by this. Okay. To be able to use kind of the tools we know that we'll review a bit later in the course on using transfer functions, we need to figure out how to get these converters represented by a transfer function and what the limitations are of that. So that's what chapter 7 is. We'll take the steady state converter models that we've been working with and extend them through some minor modifications to include transient operation, dynamics of the system. And then in chapter 8, we'll use those analysis techniques to develop these transfer functions. And in chapter 9, we're going to get into how to actually control the converter now that we have this transfer function. Okay. Again, 10 through 12 we won't cover. Okay, so motivate this. Here I'm looking at just two cases of some arbitrary inverter that is, here I'm showing the switch node voltage, the output of the inverter unfiltered, and here I'm showing the frequency content of this signal. Okay. So in this first one, took this inverter and I set D is equal to 0.5, 50% duty cycle. I get this 50% duty cycle square wave going between a normalized 1 and negative 1. When I look in the frequency domain, I've got a big spike here. Some AC component at the switching frequency, FS. In this case, FS is 450 kilohertz. And then I have harmonics out here at 3FS and every odd harmonic out to infinity, gradually decreasing amplitude. Okay, so the duty cycle here, I plotted it, would just be a flat line, and to the extent that I can draw a flat line, that's a flat line. This is D of T. My duty cycle period to period is always 0.5, no change. Okay. So if I want to model a transfer function of this thing, GVD is equal to V, you know, just drop the subscripts, GVD of S. So from my duty cycle to my output voltage, in this case, no filter. If I put a filter on there, it'll attenuate these a little bit, but I'll still have the same frequency content. The filter is a linear system, okay? So this sort of transfer function, how could I define it? So my input signal is D, and then my output signal is this PWM wave. So D itself has no frequency content. The constant value, it's just a DC, it's 0.5. This thing has some amplitude at FS, 3FS, all the way out to infinity. When I go to put that in some transfer function and I want to sketch a magnitude and phase, there's no way to do that, right? Because I can't say, I mean, this FS isn't coming from some FS in the input. There's not some gain. This thing has an amplitude of 0.1 at the switching frequency, and this thing has 1.2, so then the gain is 12. There is no switching frequency or harmonic content in the input, but it shows up at the output. Okay. Makes sense. If I set a constant duty cycle, I get ripple at the output. I get switching action. Those things are not coming from the input, they're coming from the converter itself. So this is not an LPI system, and as a whole, I can't define a transfer function for it. Okay. What I'm going to have to do is make some changes and get rid of this frequency content. Down at the bottom here, I've now given a time-varying duty cycle. So D of T is now 0.5 plus some amplitude times the sinusoid at frequency 2 pi f sub m. F sub m is my modulation frequency. That's 50 kilohertz in this case. So my duty cycle would look something like this. This one was intentionally not flat. I can do better. Okay, so now it has 0.5 plus some sinusoidal oscillation at a frequency well below my switching frequency. Okay, I'm modulating it at 50 kilohertz. I'm getting, I'm switching at 450 kilohertz. When I look at the spectrum, what do I get now? So this thing is at F sub M. This is what I want out of this system. If I start adding, changing my duty cycle at 50 kilohertz, I expect to see the output change at 50 kilohertz. So I change the duty cycle, I want that change to be reflected in the output so that I can control it. Okay. So this is the LTI component, and it's also what we want to control. The rest of this is now ripple, noise, and nonlinearities. So I still have my FS and 3FS. Now I also get a second harmonic, 2FS. And then I get these modulation sidebands, or FS plus and minus FM. These two, FS plus and minus 2 FM, which are a result of the nature of these switching systems. Okay. So I don't want any of that. Okay. This is going to be ripple in my output. These things are going to be nonlinearities associated with it. Okay, so the one argument is, okay, we don't yet have tools to analyze this. If it's not representable as a transfer function, if it's not an LTI system, I don't know what to do with it. If I input no frequency and I get a bunch of frequencies at the output, I can't represent that. I can't sketch that on a Bode plot. Okay. So we don't want that. We really only want to consider this one. As I change the duty cycle, I only want to model the change in the output that is reflected from that change in the duty cycle. Okay. The second part of it is physically, as we design this converter, okay, switching frequency and above harmonics, those are the ripple on the signal. And we want those to be small, designing the output filter, same as we talked about in the steady state case. We want a well-regulated output voltage. We want small ripple on it. And the way we do that is we add a filter. This is an inverter. I'd put an LC filter on it. That would have some transfer function of its own that looks like unity gain at low frequencies and then would fall off at 40 dB per decade. And that makes sense. This is on a different axis. It can't go through zero. But this filter would then allow any low frequency stuff to pass through, allow my DC, allow potentially my modulation frequency to pass through. But all of this higher order stuff would get attenuated by that filter. Okay? Get blocked by my low pass filter. So all this stuff we're trying to attenuate. But no matter how good of a real filter I design, that stuff's still going to be there. It's going to be smaller amplitude, but those harmonics are going to be present. So in our analysis, we're going to have to figure out a way to neglect this part of the waveform, just get this part so that we can model this with a transfer function. Okay. So an important thing here for both our modeling and for practical implementation of these systems, FM has to be much less than FS. Okay. FM, in this case, was this frequency that I'm trying to change the duty cycle to try to change the output voltage, has to be well below my switching frequency. That's so that it can pass through any filtering we do and let us attenuate everything higher order. In these plots, that's the motivation. More generally, okay, we're looking at a single frequency now, but we're going to extend this to all frequencies, do a Bode plot of the system, and then that's going to define how our controller responds to different disturbances, how our control behaves. And we have fundamentally no ability to control this thing at the switching frequency or above. And I think I've mentioned this point before, but you get every period, you get to decide the duty cycle for that period. You get to do one thing every period. There's no way to change the output voltage faster than the period, because within that period, you get one duty cycle. You can't change the duty cycle twice within the period. In one period, I get to choose one switching action. Right there. So if I want to somehow change the output voltage much faster than that, if I want to see the output voltage change like this, I have no way to do that. I only get one control action. Basically, my duty cycle is always constant within one period, because that's how I define duty cycles. I look at a period and say, what percentage of it was I in this switch position? Okay. So nothing we do, modeling or real implementation, will let us control this thing any faster than our switching frequency. In fact, we can't control at the switching frequency. So we're always going to need to be talking about controlling the output at a frequency slower than our switching frequency.
Okay.
This is plot from the book, talking about the same things. So if I have the same kind of varying duty cycle over time coming out of my gate driver, and I look in some buck converter, what I get is an output that has a low frequency variation that corresponds to the low frequency variation in the duty cycle that I'm modulating in. In this case, they say omega m to pi f sub m. And then all of this higher frequency stuff, okay? And that's all the ripple. My actual waveform has this ripple. By averaging, I can get rid of all of that ripple. Talk about that in a second, and just get that low frequency average. Okay. And that's the part that I can model in an LTI system. So requirements here, this is going to work for modulations much smaller than my steady state value. So I need a large D and a small modulation on top of it. And then as well for, same as last slide, omega M much less than omega S for changing the duty cycle much slower than the switching frequency. So another look at the spectrum that I had in the example case, and what are the different components we're going to get in really any waveform internal to the converter. If we say output voltage, this would be true of inductor current and many other things. So I have this big thing, which is a component in the output voltage at the same frequency that my control is changing. So duty cycle is changing at omega M, output voltage is changing at omega M. This is the one I want to focus on. This is the one I want to model. This is the impact of my control. And then I have all this other stuff. Stuff out here, up above the switching frequency, stuff that I can't control fundamentally, the reasons we just discussed. Stuff down here, the sidebands, and our, harmonics of the modulation frequency. Those are within my control range, but they still represent nonlinearities of the system. If I inject only at this frequency and get these three, that's still a non-LTI system. So I want to get rid of all of that in my modeling. Okay? Like I said, a filter can attenuate, but these things are still there in real systems. We're going to get rid of them in our modeling. It's going to be an approximation, but it's going to be a useful one that allows us to model these things and develop control. Okay? So the way we get rid of them is we do two things. Okay, first is where you're going to get, again, average over one switching period. As we average over one switching period, any frequency content at the switching frequency and above is going to go to zero. This is purely AC, and we're averaging over N periods of it, so it's just going to go to zero. That's going to get rid of all of this. Okay. And null the spectrum out here. And then the second thing is we're going to do a small signal linearization. Which is going to take care of this stuff down here. So we're going to linearize the system to force it to be LTI so we can model it with the transfer function. And what we're going to be left with is just the circle component, the response of the system to our perturbations in our control. And then we can model it as a transfer function and design around that. Okay, so that's the motivation. What we want to do is develop these AC modeling techniques that allow us to predict how low frequency variations in duty cycle induce low frequency variations in the converter output and voltages and currents. Low frequency means at our modulation frequency, which is much less than the switching frequency. And span the whole range from DC up to, some cases, a decade below the switching frequency, roughly. So about 10 times less than that. Okay. The way we're going to do that is we are going to average to ignore the switching ripple, and then linearize to ignore complicated modulation harmonics. So it says here, averaging is that approach to get rid of this high frequency content. Okay. Averaging, we're all experts in now. We've been doing it for a long time. We'll review kind of the formal notation here. So we are again going to be looking at voltages on inductors, currents, and capacitors. So voltage on an inductor, LdIdt, is the voltage on the inductor. When I average, recall that this notation, angle brackets Ts, denotes the average over one switching period Ts, which has this sort of mathematical definition, 1 over Ts times the integral over that switching period. Okay. So these equations are just my averaged defining equations for an inductor and capacitor. And in steady state, what we said is those have to be zero because the change in inductor current over one period has to be zero. Change in capacitor voltage over one period has to be zero. So if this thing's zero, then the thing on the right is, this is where we got volt second balance. Average voltage on the inductor is zero, cap charge balance. Okay. In steady state, this is true, but not in a transient condition. So we will not be able to say average voltage on an inductor is zero, average current in the capacitor is zero, when we are modeling in a dynamic system. Okay. So thinking forward, what is that going to mean? We're going to apply these same kind of principles and still use averaging of the voltages on the inductors and currents in the capacitors and use that to develop an equivalent circuit model. In our steady state equivalent circuit, we got an equation from inductor volt second balance, told me what all the voltages are in the loop with the inductor. The inductor was in that loop, you recall. The current in that loop is IL and the inductor was there, but the voltage across it was always zero, so we just shorted it out, it doesn't matter. Now, the voltage across it is not zero. So we get to these average models, the inductor and the capacitor are still gonna be in there. Our average equivalent circuit is still gonna have reactive elements, inductors and capacitors. Okay. So we're going to go through and derive how to sketch those equivalent circuits. Once we have them and they're averaged, they're going to be linear circuits, things that have voltage sources, transformers, inductors, capacitors, resistors. And then those circuits we can look at and write down a transfer function for them. It's going to be the general process. This is telling us that L and C won't disappear from our average models or circuits, the equations or in the equivalent circuits. Okay. So what does this end up looking like? So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to review how we average things in steady state and be a bit more formal. We've been doing this for a while now, but I think you guys have grown comfortable enough with it that you can kind of skip to the answers most of the time. And I want to relook at where this came from. Okay. So I've got some boost converter here. I'm going to look at the inductor current versus time. And starting back from kind of square one, how did we figure out what this inductor current was? Well, we said, I don't know, let me guess, that it starts somewhere, IL of zero. And then I've got a switching converter, so it's going to do something from time zero to DTS, and something else from time DTS to TS. I look at the individual subintervals of this converter. So in subinterval one, switches down here, I'm applying my input voltage directly across that inductor. That results in this current increasing with a slope of VG, which could be time varying, over L. And at the end of the period, it's increased by some amount I'm going to draw with this blue arrow. Then I switch commutates over to position two, and the inductor current ramps down. And if I'm in steady state, ramps down to some value IL of TS, which in steady state, for the steady state assumption to be true, IL of zero is equal to IL of TS. Okay. Slope as it's decreasing, in this case, is VG of T minus V of T over L. And the second interval from this value goes down by this green arrow amount. Okay, so this thing is not any kind of general truth about this system, right? This is what needs to be true for it to be in steady state, but I'm in no way guaranteed that's true about the system for arbitrary voltages and duty cycles. Okay, what I can guarantee is true is that IL of TS, inductor current at the end of the period, is IL of zero plus however much I went up in blue plus however much I came back down in green. How much I changed by in the first interval and how much I changed by in the second interval. Okay. So what does that look like if I plug in? So my current at the end of the period, current at the beginning, plus length of this blue arrow, that's going to be slope times time, VG of T over L times DTS, plus length of the green arrow, however much I came down, going to be VG of T minus V of T over L. This is D prime TS. Okay. I'm going to rearrange this equation. What I'm going to do is pull IL of zero over here and then multiply through by this L and TS term that shows up in both of my remaining terms on the right. That's going to look like is L over TS times IL of TS minus IL zero is equal to D plus D prime VG of T minus D prime V of T. Okay. So I can apply small ripple approximation. Small ripple approximation is going to apply to things like my output voltage and my input voltage. D plus D prime is 1. I get VG minus D prime V. The small ripple approximation, which is the first tool that I apply here. And then the second tool, looking at this thing on the left, L over TS, IL of TS minus IL of 0. This thing here goes to 0 if I assume I'm in steady state. My inductor current at the beginning and end of the interval are the same. If I subtract them, I get 0. This whole term goes to 0. This is my second tool, which is my volt second balance. Why do we call this volt second balance instead of current beginning end same balance? What is this expression? This is a delta I over some time, delta T times L. I can express this as L times delta I over delta T. This is the discrete derivative, di dt. So L di dt, this is the voltage on the inductor. Right? But it's not any sort of instantaneous voltage on the inductor. It's describing what happens over the entire period. So this is the average voltage on the inductor over one switching period. So this is why we say we have our shorthand. We can just jump this, look at the voltage on the inductor. Could have written this expression right at the start and said this is equal to 0. My conversion ratio is 1 over d prime. Okay, let's hit my limit. So next time what we're going to do, go through this same process, but for waveforms where we're not in steady state. See how it changes. Making note of exactly what the assumptions are built into this, where we can change things. Okay? We'll talk about that on Friday.